You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
ZipRecruiter is a proud sponsor of Without Warning podcast. Use code word WOW and search for jobs anytime, anywhere.
The Lauren Agee case was hastily closed by authorities, but many questions remain. Come behind the curtain with private investigator Sheila Waisaki as she uncovers the truth about what happened to Lauren. This is Without Warning. Warning. The following episode contains details about sexual violence and elements that are graphic in nature.
I want to thank the listeners that have sent me pictures of holding different items from our sponsors. I'm going to start posting them. They're really cute, and some of them are really funny. I appreciate you all supporting the sponsors that support the podcast. Also, if you're going to be at CrimeCon, please stop by our booth, Without Warning Podcast, and say hello. On the last episode, you heard from attorney Tom Shaw out of Dallas, Texas. On this episode, you're going to hear questions from criminal justice interns and listeners. Let's jump in with the questions.
My name is Connor. I'm a criminal justice major at MTSU, and these are my questions on the Lauren Agee case. How far from the original location were Lauren's belongings moved, and why and who moved it?
There were two campsites. In between the campsites, there was a gully. So campsite one was on the left. Campsite two, which was the main campsite, was on the right. In between there was a gully. Lauren's shoes and sleeping bag were photographed on the right. Chris Yarchuk went to the left initially, and that's where he saw Lauren's shoes, phone, jacket, and purse. How far between? I'm not quite sure, but it's a significant amount. I don't know who moved them. We'll never know unless somebody talks.
How can Sheriff Ray claim the facts from the autopsy report led him to believe Lauren fell when the autopsy report was likely incorrect in finding that she drowned because no water was in her lungs and she was found floating?
Sheriff Patrick Ray has made it completely clear that he doesn't care what the facts are. He only cares how he's portrayed in the media.
With the knowledge that Aaron Lilly bites during sex, bite marks were found on Lauren's body. If Lauren was raped, could it have been on or near her sleeping bag, and can that still be tested for DNA evidence?
Two things about that question, Connor. First, we don't know who the bite mark belongs to. The campers have all taken the Fifth. Secondly, all the evidence is gone and never collected. Lauren's sleeping bag never came back from the campsite.
According to one of the interviews, Hannah Palmer said she knew what happened. Could this not be some kind of obstruction of justice since she pled the Fifth?
I'm not an attorney, but it does make you wonder if she forfeits her right to plead the Fifth. But she does have a constitutional right to plead the Fifth.
My name is Ellie, and I am a criminal justice major at MTSU. And here are my questions on the Lauren Agee case. My first question would be, how did Lauren's body end up in the water?
We don't know how Lauren got into the water, but we do know that based on science, she would not have ended up in the second cove.
What makes the evidence look like a fall instead of the murder?
Jeremy Taylor and Sheriff Ray called it a fall immediately without getting any of the evidence. Had Jeremy Taylor and Patrick Sheriff Ray gathered evidence, they would have been able to compare if Lauren had fallen off the cliff or if she was pushed or what happened. Had they looked for blood or gone around the cliff and taken the time to look for any blood or struggles or broken twigs? Where did she fall? Where is the location where she actually died? How do they back up their theory on what happened to Lauren? Did they test a dummy and take it to different locations to see if it was physically possible for her to fall or be pushed or to be thrown?
How can you prove it was a murder and not a fall?
Bodies that are found alone are supposed to be treated as a homicide. You rule out homicide first. Had evidence been gathered where they found exactly where Lauren was pushed or shoved or fallen, whatever backed up their theory, find the twig with blood on it. Find the rock with blood on it. Where did she receive the blunt force trauma? The evidence was on the cliff, or if it wasn't on the cliff, it was on her body. Process her body. So in order to prove whether it was murder or an accident, they could have gathered all the evidence, gotten the DNA if there was on her body. They could have done a rape kit. They could have tested Lauren's sleeping bag. They could have found where the blunt force trauma happened. And if it happened in the water, where? All the evidence was there. All they had to do was process it. So the first thing that I did when I got the case was to find out if it was scientifically possible for her to fall into the water, or if she could have made it from the top of that cliff down to the water. Taking a dummy and having it tossed and thrown and pushed over and over again in different areas to see if it was physically possible. Had the police done that, they would have figured out that no, she didn't fall from the top of the cliff as everyone was saying. The evidence is in the science. The science needed to be collected, and it wasn't.
Why did Aaron and Hannah plead the fifth?
It is their constitutional right to plead the fifth.
So when you fall off a cliff, do you roll like a ball?
No, you do not roll like a ball when you fall off a cliff. Matter of fact, you hit twigs and trees and shrubs and bushes. You get scrapes.
Why did Aaron and Hannah move to Florida 2 weeks after Lauren's death if they were innocent?
Some questions I cannot answer.
Did Aaron see the body the same time as the fisherman?
Based on eyewitnesses, Aaron and Chris were paddling up to where Lauren's body was discovered. They asked, "Is that our friend over there?" and said, "Our friend is missing." So did they discover the body at the same time? Who knows?
And if they were searching for Lauren, why did they post about having a good time?
To this day, that is a mystery. Why are you posting everywhere you're having a good time and then telling people that you're out there searching for Lauren? I don't know. Is that suspicious behavior?
My name is Brene. I'm a senior at MTSU. And my questions are, why wasn't Lauren's body properly investigated? Like, why wasn't her body properly seen?
Lauren's body was not properly processed from the moment they found her. For instance, taking her out of the water and putting her on the rescue boat without anything around her to preserve the evidence. Instead, they created evidence on her body that didn't pertain to a crime scene or an accident.
Who was with Lauren in her last moments?
That question, only the person that was with Lauren can answer. They know who they are.
My name is Chelsea, and I attend Middle Tennessee State University. I'm a criminal justice major. My questions are, why were the suspects questioned so quickly and then released?
The campers were never taken into custody. Matter of fact, they did not go through significant questioning. They wrote out a paragraph to the police on what happened and left. They weren't held for questioning. Why this happens, who knows?
Does it seem like the whole investigation was rushed or pushed off a little bit?
Based on the depositions of Jeremy Taylor and Sheriff Patrick Ray, there was no investigation. No polygraphs, no follow-ups, no interview recordings of Hannah Palmer. no recording was filed, even though it was done, of Cassie Franks. So for 3 hours, Cassie Franks spoke with Jeremy Taylor, but there's no record of it. So was it hurried? Was it sloppy or non-existent? You all be the judge.
Why didn't they handle Lauren's body more properly?
Part of the training for TWRA and other first responders is how to remove a body from a situation to preserve evidence. For whatever reason in this case, whether they assumed that Lauren was drunk and fell off the cliff because that's what one of the campers said, and they felt like they didn't need to do anything to preserve the body, we'll never know. But they are taught to remove a body without touching or destroying or damaging it further through protocols and standards. They weren't followed in this case. Obviously, we've got the pictures.
Where are the boats now?
The three campers that had any kind of boating or canoeing were Chris, Bricks, and Aaron. There's no record of what happened to the canoe, which Aaron was in charge of. Bricks's boat, I believe, just recently sold. Chris's boat, ironically, is up for sale right now. Care Of is a new sponsor of Without Warning. Care Of is a subscription service that makes it easier for you to get your vitamins, protein powders personalized and delivered directly to your front door. All you have to do to get healthy is take a quiz, a fun quiz. Care Of is delivered to your front door. Vitamins that have been personalized for you that help you for your body to get more energy and sleep and maintain stress. I know with my travel schedule, the individual packs for on the go are a godsend. For the listeners of Without Warning, Care Of has offered 30% off your first order. So go to takecareof.com and enter promo code WARNING30 and get 30% off. Go to takecareof.com and enter WARNING30 to get your 30% off and start a healthier life. Daily Harvest is a proud sponsor of Without Warning podcast. Daily Harvest started as a company to take care of food so that food could take care of us. I just recently had some surgery, and I knew on the way home that I had Daily Harvest nutritional food to nourish me. I needed good food to take care of me physically, mentally, and emotionally. I also needed good food that would be quick and easy and nutritional. Daily Harvest fit the bill. Daily Harvest is meticulous about the food that they choose, where it comes from, and they guarantee the freshest nutrients will stay locked in you. When I got home, I knew I could check the box of fresh, quality, good food that would help me recover. Go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code WOW to get 3 cups free in your first box. Third Love is a proud sponsor of Without Warning podcast. On that same recovery theme, I needed to go in and have a refit of my bra size. Third Love gave me options of the perfect fit bra that was comfortable and the convenience of not having to leave home in order to be refit was comforting. With Third Love, you're getting quality, 100% fit guarantee, and comfort. Third Love has officially added 78 bra sizes with bands ranging from 30 inches to 48 inches. Cup sizes from AA to I, one of the largest ranges in the industry. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they are offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove/warning now to find your perfect fitting bra. Again, go to thirdlove.com/warning for your 15% off today.
My name is Emily. I go to Middle Tennessee State University, and I'm a criminal justice major. How did her body end up in the cove when the current was the opposite direction?
That would have been a question for the first responder, Jeremy Taylor, Sheriff Patrick Ray, to have asked. Unfortunately, they did not ask that question. How did it end up in the cove? We know by science that Lauren Agee's body did not end up in that cove based on the current. The only assumption that could be made was Lauren was placed there. She did not fall off the cliff and end up floating there. So how did she get there?
Why would she leave her shoes if she got up to go to the bathroom?
Let's play that scenario out in your head. Lauren wakes up. She needs to go to the bathroom per the campers. She's on a cliff. Last seen, one of the stories is with Chris. So she gets up. He doesn't feel her. She decides not to put on her shoes, even though she's on top of a cliff. She's not a camper. She likes things to be comfortable. But that moment, she decides not to put on her shoes. And she's going to walk to the pee area. So she would have to go from the first campsite down the gully to the second campsite, the main campsite, because it's behind the tents. Does that make sense?
Why didn't she have any more scrapes and scratches on her if she fell down the cliff?
First, I want to thank the listeners who have sent in pictures of themselves or a loved one who have actually fallen off a cliff. The comparison of pictures have been amazing, taking what Lauren looked like and what they looked like when they fell off. And it's significant. So why does Lauren not have the injuries of someone who fell off a cliff? Because she didn't.
Why wasn't her body covered or properly preserved?
Assumptions were made about how Lauren died, and no investigation was going to happen because of that. So they didn't want or need to preserve a body because they had their mind made up.
Why wasn't the canoe taken as evidence?
The canoe should have been confiscated immediately and processed, but this falls in line with no investigation was done, assumptions were made. It was the attitude of move along, nothing to see here.
Why did she not have other scratches on her face?
When someone falls down a hill, nothing is off limits. So if Lauren were falling down a hill, everything about her body would have been scraped up. There were too many bushes and branches that would have hit her. Her face would have been scratched up, period.
My name is Dejanay. And I attend Middle Tennessee State University, and I'm a criminal justice major. If she fell from the cliff, why were there not any twigs or grass in her hair?
Lauren would have had dirt, twigs, and grass in her hair had she fallen from the top of the cliff to the bottom of the cliff and rolled then into the water. Even floating in the water, it would not have been washed away.
Do you know why she would leave her belongings?
Knowing what I know about Lauren now, I do not believe that Lauren would walk away from her phone, her purse, and her clothing.
Why were all the suspects held together?
In an investigation, you are taught to separate the friends or separate the witnesses. That way, they don't get to stick to their story or get their story straight. It should have never happened.
What makes this case different than any other case when it comes to handling evidence?
This case will be studied for years on how the evidence was handled. What's different about the way the evidence was handled in Lauren's case? It wasn't done properly from the moment they found her body. She wasn't processed. Her civil rights were stomped all over in this situation. They didn't use proper protocols. standards or techniques to remove her body, potentially adding to her injuries. The obvious one is not doing a rape kit or scraping underneath her fingernails. They didn't notate that she was hemorrhaging in her throat. That's a clue, guys. They didn't notice that her nose was broken. Again, another clue. This is where I get very upset. It is the responsibility of the person taking the paycheck or the tax dollars to do their job. The medical examiner, the sheriff's department, the detective, Tennessee can do better.
My name's Jonathan. I'm a senior at MTSU. My major is criminal justice with a minor in psychology. One of the first questions I had was, what happened with the whole polygraph test? Like, did they never have to go back and get it, or did the detective tell them they didn't have to do it?
Aren't the polygraphs an interesting part of the story? You have a detective, homicide detective, telling the family that he has set up polygraphs with the kids, and they've all agreed to take them. They're supposed to come in, it was a Friday, to take them. And then Sherry Smith has the nerve to ask about the polygraphs. Well, that evidently was very upsetting to Jeremy Taylor. He said that they have lives too, and they didn't make it. So the campers who have lives of their own never took the polygraph. The other behind-the-scenes polygraph story is that Sherry Smith was told by Sheriff Patrick Ray and Jeremy Taylor that she could find her own polygrapher. Think about that. The sheriff's department is telling Sherry to get a polygrapher for them because I guess they don't have the resources in Tennessee to get a polygrapher. So none of the campers ever took a polygraph.
My next question would be, as I'm wondering how her ribs got broke. Now, I know that they can possibly happen from a fall, obviously.
The one thing I love about crowdsourcing justice is things like this that come up. Jonathan pointed out where her ribs were broken. And of course, it was at the controversial V area, which has been settled. But what came from that was the observation of how Lauren's body was put on the rescue boat, and potentially that her ribs were broken at that time. So we will be exploring that. That would be a big problem if her ribs were broken because of her body being mishandled.
Was there any kind of tools around the campsite or the crime scene, or any kind of like obvious rocks or like a big stick or something that looked like it could have been used to, as I guess you could say, like a murder weapon or whatever, if there was anything like that ever taken into account as like evidence or anything?
In an investigation, you would look for items like that, a rock, a stick, a weapon, to see if there was any kind of blood or tissue on it. But that was not done. No items were processed from that scene.
When they found her and she had her clothes on and anything, was there any kind of like tears in her clothing, either from maybe falling down a cliff or maybe getting in a fight with somebody?
The pictures we have of Lauren's clothing do not show grass stains, rips, twigs, dirt, or any stains on her clothing as someone would expect if you fell down a cliff.
Would the boats from Wakefest, as they were going by, fast or slow, would the wake from them and the waves, would that be able to push the body where Lauren's body was found?
The Wakefest event would not have been a factor of where Lauren's body was found because it was 6 miles from the location of the cove.
What is the hand dominance of all the individuals? Do we know that? As in, if somebody was maybe hitting her in the head with something, was she being hit in the right side or the left side? You know, Aaron, Hannah, are they right or left-handed? Does anybody know that?
The only one I have confirmation on is Aaron Lilly, and he is right-handed. I'm sure the listeners can help with Bricks, Chris, and Hannah. I have some listeners' questions that we're going to go over right now as well.
Mary asks, is the police officer still employed as a police officer?
If Mary is referring to Jeremy Taylor, he is not employed in DeKalb County. However, during his deposition, he was employed in another county as an officer.
Katrina wants to know, is there a possibility that Aaron and Hannah were smart enough to know that if they were married, they wouldn't be required to testify against one another?
It would be a guess on my part whether or not they knew that, but they are both represented by attorneys.
Janice said, makes me wonder how many times the police ran the same test or any other test to draw their conclusion.
We know through Sheriff Patrick Ray's deposition and Jeremy Taylor's deposition that no tests were done.
Benna asked, the boathouse people had a bathroom, so why didn't Hannah go to them first, as she kept saying Lauren was probably peeing?
In order to get over to where the boat people were, you would have to take the canoe, and the canoe was still at the bottom of the cliff, so no one left the cliff. And always, I really thank the listeners who have supported the podcast, sent in tips, worked hard crowdsourcing justice. This is a community effort. It takes all of us. So thank you. Sign up for Without Warning podcast newsletter to keep up with Lauren Agee case and my other cases, the podcast coming soon, my speaking engagements, and my PI pups.
Lauren's family gives their full permission for any and all details to be shared in hope that the truth will come out. If you know anything at all, call 1-888-599-0008 or email tips@SheilaWysocki.com.
Fleur is a proud sponsor of Without Warning podcast. Even if you spritz on perfume every day, you may not think about what's actually in it. That's why I'm excited about Fleur. They make stunning, non-toxic perfumes, and they list all the ingredients online. I like transparency. This company tells you exactly what you're getting. You get a good scent with clean ingredients, and they have a sample process that's just fun. And I know some of the listeners have gotten it and told me and emailed me their choices. And so we've been comparing. Go to Fleur.com today and use promo code WOW to get 20% off your first custom Fleur sample set. Pick 3 scents to try and get credit towards a full-size bottle of your favorite. That's promo code WOW at Fleur.com to get your sample set. 3 Fleur fragrance samples at 20% off. Fleur.com, promo code WOW.